the baddest DJ this side of town. Mixing the heat,
Ladies and gentlemen.
DJ Despair.
This is Rough Riders Radio. Coast to coast and worldwide.
Which is our motto, is without no roots, there is no fruit.
Right.
So I just wanted to say once again, welcome back to the city, your home. And when I say it like that, is because you have kind of set a template for us here in Toronto to kind of like follow. We were the ones who actually started the protests.
Yes, back when I got banned by
Much Music.
By Much Music.
I broke that story.
Yeah, I know. You broke that story. Arrow helped save my life. All your your movement and your protests, and they didn't want us to even come in the country.
You are, sorry.
It's all right.
No, it's all good. We're all family here.
We're all family.
The unique thing I wanted to ask you, your first show at Concert Hall.
Yes.
Right? It was historical. I still have shots from that day and the whole works. What did you think when you actually got to Canada and see what was happening here as far as the culture was concerned?
Well, I'm only from New York, so knowing where you are in New York, you know it's a melting pot. You have friends who, especially a lot of people from the Caribbean. And back when I was growing up, friends from the Caribbean, it wasn't like an out-and-out thing. You know, people in the United States, in the New York area, they hid their Caribbean roots in the late 60s, early 70s. It was almost like, you know, they would hide their accents. They'd be the smartest in the class. They wasn't maybe Americanized, like, you know, kids that have all the, you know, the exterior fly gear and all, and they would have whatever their parents could get them, strong family connection. But it was more like, keep it tucked under, hide it under, you know, we don't want to be exposed, don't want to be made fun of and stuff like that. And then by the mid, late 70s, you know, things became a little bit more confident. And I said New York is a place where, New York would be that place where it become more of a mix. Not necessarily places like Pittsburgh and Ohio, where you got people that migrated from down south, and they totally oblivious of the diaspora and culture and stuff like that. But I knew, being in the New York area, that when I would come to Canada, my family always would go to Montreal and Quebec to sometimes vacation.
Yes.
And that was a different dynamic makeup in Montreal and also Quebec. And also Detroit was closer to my other part of the family in Detroit. I mean, Toronto is closer to Detroit.
Yeah.
So visiting family in Detroit, coming through Toronto a couple of times in the 80s, very aware, 70s. And Aiden's very aware at the migration that started to move into Toronto. Because in the 70s, it was like folks started to move from Jamaica to Toronto, and in the late 60s, started to move from Jamaica to Brooklyn, Bronx. So my family was very aware of it, and also we had a great respect for our roots in the diaspora. So where people were Americanized and looked down at it, we would be like, oh man, we live in the same community, be you, man, and learn from each other. And I remember very clearly, it was like, it was funny in a different way. It's like, when the harder they come out, Jimmy Cliff. That gave people like, well, you ain't gonna pump me in class. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it was like, okay. And it was like 73, 74. And then, and then everybody in the United States started to understand Bob Marley more.
Yeah. One of the next questions I had was, just real quick, we started a thing called Generation Next, which we actually put generation before next.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because everybody always say next generation, but we did it that way because we find that the majority of times right now that, I don't know in other cities, but Toronto kind of, they stifle their young. They kind of press them down. Do you have any words of encouragement for people who are looking to get into the arts and looking to get into like music itself, regardless if it's behind the scene, in front of the scenes. Because I find that when we started, we came in where we were adding on before we were able to take anything from it within the culture, as just knowing somebody in high school just going, you rap.
Right.
I want to learn how to rap. Mm-hmm. These kind of things right now, how do you feel that we could help support the younger generation right now towards that?
I think the beautiful thing about Toronto and Black Canadians especially is that there is still that respect. Like when y'all have a festival, carnival, you know, that's a good way of still keeping the roots alive and say the past is the future. The elders accept the youth. The youth accept the elders with that line of culture. The fragmentation comes when people try to become Americanized and follow American culture. And American culture has been manipulated as a divide, purposely so. So whatever comes out there as popular culture, people don't look at the dynamic and say, yeah, this was put in there on purpose to divide, to destroy not only the family and community, but it's put there on purpose to even have us as adversaries towards ourselves. Old to the young, young to the old. Peer to the peer, stuff like that. Oh, you come up, so you come up, I hate that because I need to come up too. That type of stuff, you know? Those are Americanisms that have sprouted out of a plan, but when that gets too heavy for a person to try to process, it's like, oh man, what you talking about plan? And you know, you don't have all day to tell them about this is where it come from. You have to also just pour like the great aspects into it, the great things. It's like, you know, a longevity factor, if you want to have a song and spit about things. Why you think that something that has negativity is going to be more glamorous or more popular? It's going to be more popular because people say, well, damn, it's just the stuff I think I see all the time, and it seems to have results. So it's got to be, even if a bar or two is going to be like something like me pointing at you, mm-hmm. and like, get up out of my way, I'm going to diss you. And I'm like saying, okay, that's exciting maybe for a bar. It might be exciting all the way to a bar fight, you know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, man, it gotta keep being replenished to stay alive, because it's not what you call live energy. It's dead energy, man.
Yeah.
So the live energy, I think, has gotta be a mixture of what the roots and the people and the joy and the happiness had, and trying to figure out how to infuse certain things in the future. And that's only going to come from cultural people. It's going to come from the DJs.
Yeah.
How you come up with your blend and your mix of music, past, present, and future. And then what are you doing it for? Are you doing it for a head nod, or are you doing it for people to dance? Mm-hmm. The United States, they say, you know what, we're not even going to have a dance. So if you're not dancing, then it's like, okay, the music got to what? It's got to give you a head nod. So if you give you a head nod, it's like, okay, what are you doing past the head nod? Are you doing like this? Okay, well, what's the next step of that? Well, if it's just that, okay, and then bars that got your excitement, is one or two bars that, oh, okay, can you process that? Or is it just, you know, what they call, you know, lyrical gymnastics for no fucking reason at all?
So now, growing in the industry, you got the DJ coalitions, which that's how we connected over the years. And during COVID, we did a lot of things to keep a lot of the music alive.
Yeah.
I broke records that nobody knew. Your album that mm-hmm. dropped. We broke your album, and a lot of people didn't even know that surfaced before digital started to break in. And that came out with...
Well, what they're going to do when the grid goes down now?
That was...
2020.
2020, yes. And it was funny watching a lot of people talk about hip-hop and all stuff, but no one was paying attention to it. No one was watching what you were doing, and
but you know, and not to cut you off, they don't pay attention to what they pay attention to.
Perfect.
So you ask them like, all right, what was your top five last month? And you know, like, what song stuck to you from 6 months ago that you can carry around on your hip now and say, I swear by this, yo. So people are programmed their tastes. They're programmed what they're gonna like for the moment. If it don't stick around, it's like, it doesn't mean like, okay, man, it's not sticking around no more. They could, you know, it could be like junk food. You know, it's junk food ain't gonna stick and stay to you. They'll just keep giving you junk food. You know what I'm saying? You don't never really get, junk food, you never really get full. No. You get kind of like satisfied for the moment.
Just like Chinese food.
And you know what? Because people can make songs easy. No, I'm gonna talk for a while. You know, because you can make songs easy, because I'm here all goddamn day.
That's cool.
You know, because you can make songs easy. It's like, all right, then we could keep making songs like till the fucking cows come home. If I give you 80 songs and I'm saying the same thing in 80 songs and I'm just going in circles and shit like that and I just keep heating that fucking sugar note, it's like sugar, man. You know what I'm saying? Sugar, I can hit you with sugar all the time and you're gonna fiend for it. So that's a reality, just even in Sonics. It's like, you know, so what makes this song different from that song? And you waiting for a guy to give you an explanation.
Well, see, even now, what you guys have done in the past of keeping rock alive with hip hop, and now people are using hip hop again now to try and bring it back.
I think one of the problems is, and I talk about problem talker, is that people don't understand, and this is the United States thing, you know. Mm-hmm. Yo, son, for real? The world fucking me up, right? And I ask people, like, so where have you been in the world, dog? I'm just saying, though. You're saying, though, give me an answer, dog. Okay. I ain't got to be around the world to feel that the world's a problem. I'm like, so you get into that conversation, and that is the beginning of you diagnosing what the music can probably do and what the music probably cannot do at this moment. Because it's like, if the world is getting you down and you ain't been in the world, that means you can release music out there. And suppose I say, well, Addis Ababa is actually having this song that I did and it's zooming out there, mm-hmm. right? But if you don't know where it is, you be like, well, what the fuck, I ain't over there, man. I don't hear shit from you, dog. But yeah, but bro, it's 215 countries out there. This is why it's the World Wide Web. So you as a DJ, do you only look at who's following you, or do you look at, like, it's almost like when you put something in outer space, right? Mm-hmm. In outer space, they put the what? The James, what's it called? The James telescope up there, all right? And the Hubble telescope, and also the Voyager probes. They don't know where that shit's gonna end up, and they don't know what it's doing, but at the same time, they got some monitoring on it, and they said, well, this is the data we receive. When you put art out there and music out there, you kinda like really don't know where it's going or supposed to go. At the end of the day, and I tell them as artists too, I said, just do your art, because don't worry about who's not following you, worry about who's following you. You spend all your time, I got 30 followers. But why are you mad? Because I should have 100. Because 100 people, but I only got 30. I said, well, count the 30. Make your 30, 100 in your duty, and don't worry about the 70, because that's what businesses do. That's what the weather does. The weather is like, okay, the weather is, but we don't have a thunderstorm. The fuck? I want me to have a thunderstorm. I want to know what the weather is right now, dog. So, the same thing in music. Mm-hmm. You making music, you got to pay attention to the one. Where's Gary at?
Right here.
Put up the one, man. Put up the one. You got to pay attention to the one.
So,
because one person at a time, this whole thing is like how many followers you got?
I got 9,000.
Got 9,000.
On Instagram, but on total networks, I got over a million between all my networks, and I'm on over 30 different platforms.
Oh yeah, do they follow you or they follow
the platform? They follow the music.
They follow
the because I have my own app.
There you go.
See, that's why they're DJs and like with the app.
Yeah.
We started the generation of that because we've had our own app for 12 years.
There you go.
See, people just jumped on it to now. Like I could stream right now to my app if I wanted.
Right.
See, a lot of people don't know that aspect of the app because the app is another, like you said earlier, you have to have your own networks. So we turned around and I joined up with United Music Mafia. We built our own streaming platform because everybody was on Clubhouse. And I heard you on Clubhouse when you guys were talking about why don't we own our own things? Why don't we have our own stuff? And then five guys I joined up with went and did it. And they made a YouTube platform, a Facebook type style called Uslade. Another was Ustreaming Mafia. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, you know, and then we have Next Level DJs, yeah, and exactly. Nerve DJs, and everybody co-signed together. So all the coalitions work together. So right. We have over 20 plus thousand DJs.
You make your charts? Which,
oh, yes.
And let me tell you why this, the reason charts are important. Because people want to read quicker than they hear. Mm-hmm. And they might not have, like, you know, like, I don't have 15 minutes to listen to a set. Some people might say, okay, I'm gonna spend this hour listening to a DJ do their thing. But what they will see and what they will accomplish in a matter of 30 seconds if they read your chart.
Well, you see, now, you can't just be a DJ. You can't just be an artist. So I decided to be an artist, DJ, podcaster. Yeah. So you go on iTunes, you get my music, you get my podcast, you get my app.
Right.
Simple things. Spotify, the same thing. But a lot of people don't seem to understand the evolving of the evolution of digital.
Do you count them?
Oh, yes. And I do monetization, analytics.
No, I said, do you count the people that seem to don't understand?
No, not really. See, you can't count that many people. Yeah. Man.
So the way how we are right now between me and him joined together as a team, I won Just Post Mixtape Award in 2003. And there's a difference between the States and Canada.
Yeah.
The States to me is the body. Canada is like an arm, right? And when I say it like that, because most of the decisions are made on that side, because I used to report for Hits Magazine. We've been doing...
Do you think that's fair?
Actually,
if you had to say the States is the body, then what's London?
London might be the head. Might be the head.
See, but the thing is, what he's saying is right, yeah. Though, because the UK, and when it comes down to breaking a Canadian artist, they'll grow up in the UK before they grow up in the States.
That's right.
But reggae artists, all the different aspects of that. Same thing with Public Enemy. They did better in the UK than they did in the States.
Public Enemy blew up in London.
Yeah.
And we never blew up in the United States. And I mean, we did. But London first.
Westwood, I heard you on.
Yeah.
I heard you on Westwood. We chopped it up when he came. And
Westwood was not, he wasn't there in the first two inclinations.
Mm-hmm.
So we blew up London from a bunch of different vantage points before anybody even went over there. You know, they had the 86 tour and Schooley went over there and stuff like that. But they kind of went in there and kind of like, okay. But we came in there with the 1987 Def Jam tour, LL, Eric DeRakim. It was really the first time that we coming down there to put the hammer down. But we were new in 87, and Eric B. and Rakim, they had, matter of fact, I got called Eric B. later on. They had 86, 87, and then, of course, you know, LL was 84, 85, 86, 87. So they were our seniors going over there, and so and through press. That's why I say all this is important, is even when they try to move you and all, move the thing along. Yeah. The Overwhelmers show came out, I concentrated interviews and all my attention at London while we was on tour in the States. May, June, July, August, September, October, and then went over there in November and tore shit up. But, you know, we set it up for 6 months while everybody was like, hey, London, who the fuck goes over there? You know,
yeah.
So it's about grabbing your territory. Same thing with DJs and artists today. If you trying to be the, you know, like the 500th spitting artist trying to make it in the city of Chicago, you know, and you say, you know what, I ain't gonna try to spend my time in LA or New York, and but these places
might be feeling you first.
You see, right? You see, like, with that note, I had a billboard go up in Chicago in February, and I could get I have another one going up in Times Square soon. But just by putting up that billboard in Chicago caused such a rift with certain people because they couldn't believe a Canadian DJ got his felt on a billboard.
Well, that was a good move.
But yeah, it was a wicked move.
And it was an electronic billboard?
Yeah, I don't know. It was electronic. Yeah, but the whole thing.
That's dope because that opened up because in the past, a billboard had to stay there for thing. But now we can move on there and buy your time in there, so that's good.
And then people don't understand the power of that now, especially with advertising. A lot of people lose aspects as digital happen, that they forget about the footwork, the flyers, we release the vinyl. People don't realize what a vinyl really aspects. So it's like, And since Fear of the Black Planet and the stuff that you've done, like since I was growing up, I remember going to school with the t-shirt on and the teacher telling me how to wear it. You know, I was like, I remember, yeah, and I grew up in Winnipeg. So it's like, I grew up in a very similar area.
You know that.
Yeah, I was like, and I remember that time when you guys came down and Flavor Flav like snuck underneath and popped up on the stage with you. And when I was the one who threw the weed up to it.
Oh,
so it's like when you like just
who's the group out of
we got one more of that.
Okay, we'll do one more of that. But what was the group out of, was it Mood?
Mood Rough.
Mood Rough.
Yes,
right. I played them on it was one of my first groups I played on my rap station. But now rap station's been around 13 years. But 20 years and 13 years of Eddie Don't Stop, I played Mood Rough.
Well, clips from Hip Hop Homage said to salute.
Oh yeah, because
I told him I was gonna come chop it up with you at the same time, and I know you gotta go and all.
Yeah, we appreciate it, and I'm glad you got that. Well, I've talked to you on conference calls for years.
I know.
So I appreciate it. I'm glad. I'm really happy. Hey, I have to make a call to States to get it. So
that's okay. Dope. You know what I mean? Oh, but you got my information now.
Oh, I got everything.
Okay,
now.
All right. You know what I'm saying? So just. You know, and we have Rap Station, which we think is probably the greatest internet work on the planet Earth. It's 10 station channels, and we really concentrate on Planet Earth, Planet Rap, which is this only station show and segment in the hip-hop world that concentrates on the hip-hop.
Rough Riders Radio. The baddest DJ this side of town. Mixing the heat,
Ladies and gentlemen.
DJ Despair.
What up, what up, what up, world? This is DJ Despair, and I have the legendary Ali Shabazz, Cutty Mac in the building. Author, dancer, man of all tricks podcast. What's going on with you?
What's up, Cutty Mac? You know, Cutty Mac in full time. You know how we get down.
So, big brother, it's been a minute since we last talked, and the last time we talked, you hit me with one of these books, like during the time that I was in need when I was going through some things, and you uplifted me. You had me seeing things on a different light, and a lot of the conversations and stuff we had, you've like, you know, talked about the legend, you talked about people you worked with and danced with, so I want the world to know how I know you and what's going on, so give us a bit about who Cutty Mac is.
That's right. But since you had that classic urban novel right there, Young Lux on the West Side, I'm currently working on part 3 right about now. So right now I'm in my mode because we're approaching football season, and I always like to do something aggressive and testosterone driven around this time. So I'm actually getting back into coaching, putting on my Coach Cutty hat, and working on Young Lox 3 at the same time. So I'm about to lock in for a good 30 days and hopefully come out, you know, with a championship and a Pulitzer Prize.
So knowing, like, now you're coaching, you got your podcast. Like, tell me about the podcast. Like, how's that going? Like, how did you start that up? Okay, you're talking to a lot of legends in the game, like you know, that you danced with and hung out with. So I like
that. So we're doing hip-hop dance stories. You know, we have all the elements of hip hop. You know, you got your rapping, your DJing, your graffiti, and your dancing. And so, you know, I had to represent the dance hard because, you know, sometimes we put a lot of energy in the game and we seem to be overlooked. So I can't let that happen. So one day, me and Bilo were just chopping up game. We just told a quick little story when we sent ourselves on tour, put our own little money together. And from there, it just took off. And, like, everybody chimed in. And we brought Afro aboard that very next week, you know, no hesitation, because she was down with us day one. And, man, we put it together. So we bring, like, the best dancers of all time, come to the platform, tell their story. And, like, we got dope stories, you know what I'm saying? Because it was like we was getting in the clubs and even, like, a little, I wouldn't say better for no competition, but almost better because we had no record out and things like that. So to be able to get in the club, you know, walk through just like the top rappers and DJs did, you know, that meant something, especially on the dance tip, for real. So, you know, so we paid the way, and we got dope stories. Like, we got dope tour stories and everything. So it was, now it's our time to shine. You don't want to tell your stories too early because dance is also a finicky game. If you even see the texture of the dance, like say outside the dance world where everybody's involved. Like even now, the last thing probably hit, like, you know, old ladies and stuff like that was, you know, was tuning in to dance was probably the Jabberwockies. So look at that big old gap. That's been a big gap. You know what I'm saying? So the next run should be coming around soon.
So like in your dance career, like what made you actually get your feet wet and start, you know, deciding like this is something I want to do?
Okay, I got my feet wet at the, infamous Uncle Jam's Army. That was like the biggest dance promotion on the West Coast. It would be 10,000 party people there inside a sports arena. That's where a USC basketball team played. You dig? You know what I'm saying? So they was holding, packing jams there, you know, dances, you know, no alcohol. Picture that, you know? So that's where I got my feet wet. Like that's where I saw, first saw Run DMC, first saw, you know, New Edition popped up, LL. But well, people would never, unless you were there, you would never know that, you know, as big as Run DMC and them was, Egyptian Lover was a star. DJing, not his records, to see him DJ. Like the crowd, that's the only time the crowd was actually stopped dancing when Egyptian Lover got on stage about midnight and did his little set. Man, it was amazing. So from there, though, like I said, that was all older kids. I was 14, like I said, really absorbing, but participating in the freak line.
Yeah.
So then we move on to Ultra Wave, which was all dance competition. Now that was on the west side of LA, you know, and whole different scene, whole different look. So if you remember the era, we're kind of getting into like the English beat and the madness and ska and stuff like that. So the West Side had that look, you know, slick back hair, tapered pants, you know, Doc Martin shoes, you know, having that look. So that was like, the, you know, the old man suits, kind of like the Temptations, if he was like, you know, dancing. But they went to that look. So it still went with the music, though, because it was still computer-driven type music, type beats. But then when hip-hop came in, the whole movement changed, the pace changed. So say we was going trendy era, everything started out at 120 beats per minute. Like that was the minimum. You know, sometimes it was even faster. You know, like say Kraftwerk, that, you know, everybody knows Kraftwerk Numbers or Tour de France. Take those, right, which is already kind of an upbeat song. We would turn those up even faster during the trendy era. You know, not Chipmunk fast, but fast. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, any 120 was the minimum. So we talking 130s, 140s. That was the beat. That was the pace of the music. And I saw in the long run for dance, it gave us mad endurance. I tell you that. That's why our Soul Brothers was able to hold so many combinations for so long. I guess that came from the practice from the trendy era. Because the beats was just fast. You know what I'm saying? So now we had a slow pace with the hip hop. You know, rap's coming in, the money's new. So we were 8 man groups back then. So as you see, when Kane and them came out, Houdini just had two dancers. So unfortunately, fortunately, we got to keep three. And thus me, B-Love, and Craigie came on the scene as Soul Brothers Hip Hop. And man, we started putting in work. Real serious about it.
So who have you toured with as a backup dancer and stuff?
Man, we got to go with, of course, Dub Jeff.
Oh, wow.
And even back then and now, it's still Houdini, Dougie Fresh. And I'm talking current stuff now, like what's happening now. We do old school stuff, shows and stuff. So anytime we need to really put some heat on some cats, we're still the go-to guys. So like I said, Houdini calls when they come to the West Coast, Dougie Fresh, yo. So yeah, we get down like that. But back in the day, shit, Brand New Heavies, De La Soul, Big Daddy Kane, KRS-One, shit, Booyah Tribe, shit, Redhead Kingpin, Rex and Effect. I mean, everybody, man. Too Short.
I love the industry because a lot of people don't know it from the dancer side of it. And like, I had a fortunate time of growing up with breakdancing and dancing with dance groups and doing, you know, fashion shows and all those little things we were growing up, because it was a thing to do. Like we all knew how to do rhythm. Even my cousins would watch every video and everything. And I used to watch a lot of things that you did, like a lot. Like, your routines were like so like perfect to do, because you could just stunt on anybody and just switch into anything. You don't even know what's going on, because, you know, and then because most of the times when you see with certain dancers, they will let off what move they're going to do, what's their dominant stuff, and, you know, certain things, right? And there's not a lot of dancers who can freestyle, like, you know, just randomly just work. And that's what I loved about what hip-hop brought and you guys brought, because you changed through so many different genres of music, like just the styles. And you grew, you came into that, like, when hip hop this turned his style to, like, you know, beat, like 88 beats per minute to 70 something, like, that must have just been a whole nother, like, routines must have been so much easier to do because they weren't as fast as they used to be. You know what I mean? Like, because when you watch some videos, you watch Heavy D, you watch, you know, Biz Markie, rest in peace. I've seen the stuff with, like, you know, Doc Ice and UTFO and all that, like, you know, and then even saying working with Houdini, I used to love watching those videos.
Yeah, man.
And wanted to learn how to do those. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like,
man, best times.
Did you ever get a chance to work with MC Hammer?
MC Hammer, man, we had a great relationship with MC Hammer. Well, we always kind of kept it allies first, rivals second. So meaning that when it was just us and it was like, you know, we first met, like, who's going to dominate this movement right here in the circle. So that's when it becomes rivals. But when it's time to come to L.A. and combine to make his show even greater, then we were straight allies.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's how that went down with Hammer.
Huh. So who have you ever had a chance to, like, say you're at a party or something and then you're dancing and someone tried to challenge you, like, famous? Like, anybody ever tried to challenge you, like, from, like, the legends, like, you know?
Man, a few, but I'm going to tell you one that comes to mind, like the one you said, the way you phrased it. First one comes to mind, man. I don't know why they did that. Fucking Aaron Hall.
What?
We was about to try to get it on right after the Soul Train Awards, and we was about to just spar. It wasn't even no battle. We was about to just light up the scene with Scoob and Scrap Lover. Because I already knew them already, but the other two Soul Brothers didn't know them that well yet. And so it was time for us, you know, all of us to meet, right? So we get to the floor. And for some reason, Aaron Hall jumps in there and starts doing his Aaron Hall moves on Craig. Man, Craig destroys this dude. Craig destroys this cat. And then it was like a fight, right? Like, you know how a fight be when you, like, got you get beat up and you tell your friend, yo, get this fool. So Aaron Hall knew he was just, like, destroyed. So he was like, get this fool and grab Scrap and push Scrap in the circle. So by now, Craig zoned out. He don't even see a Scrap. So it was like, they almost went head up for a minute, but it was like, yo, that's my boy. So, Aaron Hall was terrible. Awful. So, I don't know why he did that.
So have you ever come across anything like, you know, being around Michael Jackson? You know, like, because during that time, there's a lot of y'all that were dancing, and then, like, you know, because we got a chance to talk to Turbo and certain people.
That comes up more now than ever. That right there, that was the one that just kind of, like, shut us down for a minute. That was like, and I hate to be that, because we always fashioned ourselves to follow the blueprint of Muhammad Ali, you know, even the ups and downs. But that blow right there, we was George Foreman. We got knocked out, and it took us about 10 years to get back up.
Explain. I got to hear.
Well, we locked it in. I'm not going to make the long story, but we locked it in, and we were going to have our own part with Michael Jackson and Remember the Time.
Oh.
I mean, man, we had the dopest gear. They built us our own set. You know what I'm saying? That's why I said, now it's all making sense to you. They built us. They asked us, like, we never been in a position to be like, what do you want? Yo, we want a staircase. Yo, I want to slide right there around. Yo, I want a podium, three podiums right there so we can do, you know, wall work. Right?
Y'all did too much.
They built all that, right? Gave us dope gear. You know, we had riding boots. I mean, we look like the three wise men pretty much.
What?
So first happened, Mike caught the flu. So that kind of delayed shooting. And now that I'm in post-production now, I'm like, man, it was really killing the budget. Because, like, it's a video. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. should movies take should 6 weeks, 8 weeks, you know? And videos took, like, 3 weeks. That's too long for a 3-4 minute video. But anyway, that happened first. So then, I could say, I don't want to say a name yet, but you know, I have an idea who it was. Our call time for the day we were supposed to shoot was crossed out and penciled too. What? It crossed our shot at number two pencil. So say if our call time was 3, somebody put 6 or some shit like that, you know? And so when we got there, John thinks it was kind of hot. He was like, man, where y'all been? We was like, man, we on time. Our call time at 6. Y'all call time at 3. Look at the paper. So he looked at the paper and saw somebody crossed our shit out. So now he's like, all right, man, we only got a little time, man. Get dressed. So we got dressed. We warmed up, getting ready. And he was counting it down. 10 minutes to the Soul Brothers and Michael Jackson part. Everybody, even the cameraman is like, I can't wait for this. So all the dancers change clothes, come out. Everybody. I mean, it's like an audience is waiting for our part. 5 minutes, Soul Brothers, Michael Jackson part. 2 minutes, take the set, you know what I'm saying? Then John Singleton walk up, I'm thinking he's like, man, you know, about to pump us up. He's like, yo, man, we can't do it. We ran out of time. I was like, man, Cuddy, Brody, we set in that spot. It was like a straight movie. We set in that spot for at least the next hour. Just sat there, didn't move.
Man, so somebody sabotaged you guys?
Yeah, on the set they built, we just sat there, man. I'm like, this is some bullshit. So, yeah, man. So, like I said, it didn't, like, we didn't leave the game. Like, because, like, you know what I'm saying? They ran us out the game. But it was like, if you know the art and science of dance,
yeah,
we did that to catapult us to the next wave. Because, like I said, G-Funk was coming in. Like I said, dance has its moments. Dance has its moment and it disappears. Moment disappears. So we know that would have catapulted us overseas and been able to make the quality paper and stuff we had to make instead of still teaching dance class and shit like that, which a lot of my guys are doing now.
So you see a lot of things like that, like, you know, you got to look at it as a blessing because, you know, one situation could have went certain ways. But it pushed you to a different way that made you realize that you can't trust nobody in the industry.
That's why I was so hesitant when John Singleton came back around and used Young Lokes on the West Side that you have there for Snowfall. He had all the actors read it. So I had no excitement. I got no thrill for like, ooh, John Singleton having my shit. Because after that first rodeo, you gotta come with it. You know what I'm saying? You got to come with it, and he didn't. But like I said, he was still playing mind games. But he pumped us up to the point where I was sick of it. So I wasn't bought because he said he wasn't going to help me. But I don't know if he was doing reverse psychology or what. But I went and bought the camera lights that you see behind me. Yeah. And shit, we started filming our own shit. Now, that's not even what I wanted to do. I'm just an editor by nature, but...
Right.
After that, I'm like, fuck it.
Well,
I do it.
You see, that's why I look up to guys like you, because it's like you didn't just go to these things and not want to learn things. You know what I mean? Like, I know you at the set, you're dancing and everything, but you're watching the camera guy, the director, going, okay, that's how they do it. All right.
Because
that was education for us. And a lot of people never took it like that a lot of us learn from watching and hands on being in certain situations. Like, yeah. You know, you learned endurance by watching another dancer doing things and then working with that dancer and then finding out how they do their exercise, how what they drink before they go, how they, you know, like alkaline water, all that different stuff and everything. Like, your body's a temple when it comes to dancing because anything can happen. And, like, have you ever had any severe injuries, like, during dancing that's caused you to, like, chill out for a bit or, you know, take it easy?
Early in the game. It was early in my rookie season, too. So we're talking like, it was right about leaving football, 11th grade. What's 11th grade? 17? Yep, 17. I had one. But that same knee is starting to like aggravate me now. So I'm going to have to revisit that, you know, in the next 20 years. But I do my best, you know what I'm saying? I keep doing my little knee exercises. But
CBD and THC. I'm telling you that right now. The bombs and creams. Sure.
All right. I'm
going to find a way to get you some of that strong stuff we got from Canada.
I wouldn't blame dancing. What happened was I went snowboarding.
You see?
I let that heel raw.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So that's actually probably what like aggravated again.
You know, it's funny. I was telling my kids and everybody, I was like, they're like, oh, yeah, you know, snowboarding. I'm like, yeah, we used to do that. Yeah, right. I'm just like, every interview lately I've been having, someone's bringing that up. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and a lot of people don't understand that we did have a lifestyle outside of music, outside of stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so what do you do for fun outside of the music and writing? Like, what do you do to prep yourself and enjoy, like, you know, get a break from it?
Man. Well, since like me being an only child, I'm adventurous. So I'm kind of down for anything. But my pure excitement, man, I just like how, like I said, going on doing new things, you know, meeting a nice, pretty sister and making it happen from there. You know, that's like, that's my favorite pastime. So it's like that is everything that comes involved with it. You know, if it's taking a trip or whatever the case may be. But like I said, we just went zip lining for Father's Day. So me and my son. So
yeah,
I'm just like up for anything.
So being a father and it, like, so now is your son taking into what you do and your interest in anything, what you got going on?
Actually, he bringing his art skills out now with his clothing. Stay Out the Way clothing and Jay Bass clothing. Yep, he's been doing that. Came late. So, but yeah, he's just taking that in now. He was always like,
it's never late.
He was always on that math tip for a while.
Hey, it's never late. Look at our other brother. He started kicking off his right now. So,
yeah.
You know, got wrestled up to the cocaine brand, you know, salute the cocaine. So man,
is that the rapper Cocaine?
Yeah, that's our brother Cocaine.
Man, his new shit is hard with him and Kool Rock Steve. That's my shit.
But I'm saying, that's why now it was like, I want to see y'all start doing that serious gangsta boogie.
and Kool Rock laid over that flow, man, like he was fresh, you know what I'm saying?
But you see, this is what I love about.
That shit was dope.
But that's what I mean about you guys. Give, like, I grew up on all y'all, so y'all being around still doing things and all stuff. I like the music that's out today. Don't get me wrong, I ain't hating on it. It's my kids' stuff, they listen to it. Like, you know, when I was listening to hip hop, my parents were barely, you know, in between. You know, my grandparents didn't like it. So it's like when you get older, you start to understand that the difference of what you like, what other people like, especially being a DJ. And then, you know, it's like doing dance routines and all stuff. You got to figure out what certain songs will go to work with certain people, you know, like what certain routines is going to wow the crowd, everything. Everything is an art and a wow factor and a challenge in life. Cause ever sit down one day and think of a dance move that nobody thought you could do. And then you pulled it off. What kind of move, like, you ever done anything like that?
Not necessarily, because you're in the moment. It's not until you look back on it.
Okay.
And you be like, whoa, what was that? So, yeah, like, when you're in the moment, but no, I was never the flipper or the daredevil cat like that. You know, I was more the smooth showman. That's my style. So, yeah, so hitting a dope flip into a splits or something was never, like, you know. But like I said, some shit, like I said, you don't know when you're in that zone and you be like, woo. So those are like my moments right there. He's up so cold. You'd be like, man, you know you're in that zone.
So when you've done, you know, touring with other artists and stuff like that, have you ever got to a point where you've actually showed up the artist on stage like so bad that it just like?
Oh yeah, that's why it was so hard for us to come up. That was our known for. It was like, that's why it tripped me out. And before I go into that, I wanted to say once again, shout out to Cocaine and them, because like, say it's always, you know, you get respect from your peers and dancing and stuff like that. But when like the Cocaines and the Battle Cats and the 187s be like, you know, y'all our favorite dancers, that's a whole nother level. You feel me? Because they in a whole different lane.
Oh, trust
over
me.
Here doing G-Funk, but still propping us up on our Soul Brother Boogie. So, and mutual respect with them. So it was like that kind of like keeps me driven like to this day. So anyway, but yeah, showing up cats are like, so say we watched the, what was that movie, Cadillac Records, with Muddy Waters and them was like going spot to spot, mm-hmm. you know, looking for cats to take out, the headhunters. That was our mentality. You know what I'm saying? So any artist, like you said, they had to go. You know what I'm saying? Like it's all, even now, like when we going against somebody good, we with Houdini, man, you know, he'll let us know. This is a cool show. It's a classy show. This is Lights Out right here. Lights Out James Tony. So now we go into there with that mentality that everybody on before us or after us is out of here. So, yeah, so that, like I said, a lot of cats were scared to put us on the bill because they came after us. It was over. It was a wrap. I mean, that's documented. You know, you can see that in the newspaper. You see, a lot of job concert reviews where we wax cats.
See, that mentality has always been a big thing with me because, like, whether you put me to open or end the show, I always do something dickheaded. And it was like, yeah. Always, and I hated the fact that when they used to put me open before a whack DJ, I'd embarrass them. Like, and it's just like, if you don't know how to adapt to your environment, especially when it comes to dancing, like, say someone's going to do something and copy back your move, and then you're just like, okay, I got a couple other ones in my head I'm going to do next. You know what I mean? Like, or some secret stuff that you guys practice that no one ever knew you do it. And then that whole bragging and boasting is the biggest thing that I loved about dancing, because it gave you that self-confidence. And trust me, the ladies loved you. Like, it's just like, no matter what. Like,
tell you, promoters got mad at us, like, even like I said, up to now, even recent, because we'll like be a situation, somebody might be fighting about who's going on last. We'll be like, for real, put us on first, bro. Oh. We go on first, destroy everything. Promoter, like, man, you almost killed me tonight, bro, because cats are walking out, you know. I put my man out there, we did a Houdini show at the House of Blues. And we opened up for somebody, and a lot of cats was leaving, and they was in rare form, you know, because we put it on them. We ain't playing.
So, like, now in your career, is like, you still gilded it. You still getting it. Like, you never stopped. Like, it just...
Yeah, and like I said, and being older now, like I said, you have different moments for different crowds. Like, now I'm really, like I said, I'm still learning, man, like the art and science of mm-hmm. going to different places and seeing who's hitting, because like I said, we might hit, and I know for sure we're going to hit in San Diego. But depending on who's on the bill, we might not hit in L.A. You know, they might like, you know, L.A. is finicky. They might like somebody else that day. So like I said, even like recently, my man Shock G, our last concerts we did together, rest in peace. We was in Palm Springs. He opened up. No fanfare. No nothing. Bro, did we go, 4 hours away to San Diego? Bro, it's a sea.
Wow.
All look like Humpty. So now, like I said, I'm older now, so I'm outside looking in. And I'm like, wait a minute. Humpty is older than, you know, at least 2-3 years older than me, so these guys got to be at least 55, 56, 57. Like, and they all got the Humpty nose on. I mean, he had a whole movement, man. I couldn't, like, the whole, at least first 10 rows was all Humpties.
Wow.
I was like, what? And he had to close the show that night. So just like I said, 4 hours away, he was the closer, headliner.
You see,
it was amazing. I couldn't believe it.
How was it working with Shock G? Like, literally, like, you know, you hear all the different stories. I want to hear your story.
Well, it was dope because we caught him in the very beginning when they were doing the What You Like, the same director who did that video in Humpty Hump did Jeff's first two videos, Dropping Rhymes and Black to the Future. So we were like, they were like, you know, editing in one room. We was coming in to do our edit. So we had, you know, learned about them early. But it was a trip too, man, because so many people was like that time in the Bay, that's when it was really, really popping. So it was all about, you know, still Hammer. But these dudes called the Wild Boys. And later on, they became Christian. They was with Rockefeller. They was a singing group. Now, this is the trip right here. I've been telling people, that's why it's so hard for me to tell my Tupac stories. Because when it was the Wild Boys, Hammer, Soul Brothers, Shock G, you know, Sway and Tech in the Morning, we were like the stars of that moment. Like, yeah. Tupac was like a co-star. So when I tell my Bay Area story, like, Tupac was there, but he wasn't Tupac as we know him then. He was still, like I said, he was still Pac, you know what I'm saying, the same confidence. Well, and all
yeah, he shit. Was a backup dancer but, in, you know, with the group. So he was just
yeah,
coming up.
Yeah, so it was all about Wild Boys and Hammers at that time, like I said, which is Christian. But, yeah, it was like, and it was like three more of them. But it was like, that was the talk of the town.
I think the fact that when Pac came out with you got from that area is that they needed something different. They wanted something to compete with the rest of the gangster stuff that was going on. And that's where you saw Pac go from same song to switching to I Got Me Trap. You know what I mean? And then that's where you saw the transition of all of that going down. Yeah. And that's where the whole Bay Area changed. Like everything. Yeah. And next you know, your Pac's in New York and then he's in L.A. and Pac was everywhere. So it was just like
it was actually a trip, man, because he was rapping with his brother Ray Love at the time, and they were on the Panther tip. But Ray Love had some type of connection to Cab Calloway, so we was always talking to Ray Love. So Pac, you know what I'm saying, was like, you know, came with Ray Love, but we were actually going out there to meet Ray Love to hear some Cab Calloway stories. Ain't that a trip?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we met Tupac by default. So that's why I said, it's like I said, when I tell my story, it's like a trip to see like he turned into.
So being around the, you know, the whole boogie area and all the stuff and the funk and everything, you got a chance to work with George Clinton, like, and all any of that? Like, or
nah, even,
like,
man. Only highlight I had with George Clinton, he came and bought some weed from me in 98. he came over with my, one of my Cuddy Macs, Pave Pleeply, shout out to him.
So I'm glad you touched on to that because I know you a connoisseur like myself. And so and you still are to this day, actually. So I appreciate you on that because you've learned, like, you grew on that. You adapted to it. Now I know you're using for medical uses, like, you know, pain, you know, as I said earlier. Like, how do you feel now that it's legal and, like, the world's changed like this? Because, come on, coming from back in the eras where you had to literally hide that, like, stash that, not show that. Now you can just walk around going,
You know what? I feel the same because we've always been free with it. It's like the places where we needed to open up, even when it wasn't legal.
Yeah,
we always seem to open up. And then, like I said, that first tour we went on, sent ourselves on, like, we smoked right on the public train. And, like, nobody said nothing. Like, it was no problem. So, yeah, like I said, we knew we didn't do it in daytime hours, like I said, when everybody was chilling. But, yeah, man, they wasn't tripping at all, man. So, yeah, I've always been free with it, man.
See, that's what I like. Because a lot of people in the game that, you know, is like, in my whole career, I've always told promoters, everything, it got to the point where they're allowing me to smoke in the building because it's just, that's who I am. Like, you know, and then when I got hurt, you know, during that time there, after my medical stuff, I completely took it serious. And then I just cut the alcohol, everything else out and just said, okay, I'm just going to smoke. And then ever since then, my life has been so much better because I'm not, like, when I drank, it didn't sit well with me because in that scene, I didn't trust nobody because I'm in the clubs. I was in the things a lot. You know what I mean? And, you know, and getting a chance to talk to guys like you and saying, okay, what's the do's or don'ts? What should I not do? Like, what am I doing wrong? Or what did I do right? Or, like, you know, there's certain things makes me happy to even have these conversations with guys like you in a game, because I want to show people from the DJ side to the dancer side to the artist side to even behind the scenes what you guys go through, because like you said, somebody sabotaged you on purpose because they knew that could have been a big break for your career. That yes, scene right there would have been world known to this day. You know what I mean? And when you look at things like that, it's like when you get one break, another break puts you in a situation where it's like, okay, now you're in a humble situation where you're in a different fan base, so you're not caught up in that world. And that's what I feel is good for you, because none of you guys have ever got caught up in that tabloid nonsense. Like, you know what I mean? Like how you see the game is right now.
Yeah.
Like, how do you feel about what is going on in our music genre right now? Like, what has hip-hop changed in your mind that you are not accepting, or like, you know, in your terms?
Only thing I don't like about the game right now, because I don't have that, like my son and all his friends always had played dope shit, so I never had to be that father that was, you know, comparing my era to their era, you know, always blended, you know? So like I said, the only thing I don't like is there's like 12 times the U.S. currency or any money from anywhere. It's 12 times the money that it was in my era. And cash is not doing the right thing with it, you know? Even for their own family and they own, you know what I'm saying? This started at home. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people are blowing just a lot of bread, tricking, all kind of shit. They could really be establishing shit for their family, for their kids, give them some direction. You know what I'm saying? So that's the only part that, like I said, just too much blowing bread. You know what I'm saying? Have a good time. Enjoy yourself. Treat yourself to nice things depending on who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I have no qualms with that. But handle business too. That's the fun part. Like, I love to handle business and then go treat myself to something nice. You know what I'm saying? Then treat somebody, then see somebody else come up and let's see them come up. So, like, that's just my thing. So, I don't want everybody, you know, to do it like I do it, but be wise with the bread. That's all. Just be wise with it because it's coming at abundance. And you know what I'm saying? It's going to be in and out so fast. Because I ask my the youngsters all the time, what rapper is this? What rapper is that? They don't even know. What's his name? I don't know. That was last year, you know? So I was like, what? So, yeah, that's the only part I could disagree with. But as far as music and talent and shit like that, I just happen to get lucky to always find some youngsters that's dope.
You know what? And I'm glad you said that, because I just want to leave it on that note, because that was the best thing anybody's ever said on that tip. Because a lot of people are just sitting there knocking the music, knocking everything and all this stuff. And yes, because anything that you're doing to make money, is as long as you feel that you're happy with it, you have a fan base, you have a crowd for it, that's good. Because a lot of people didn't like rock music compared to hip-hop music. A lot of people didn't like metal music to a lot of other things. So give out your social media and tell people how to get a hold of you.
Okay, all across all platforms, Soul Brother Legendary. You know, at Soul Brother Legendary across all platforms. Want to Google me? You know what I'm saying? Go the whole full name, Legendary Ali Shabazz.
You know, we got the fire. Follow the world best DJ Despair on Twitter, Facebook, and for mixtape hosting and bookings at djdespair@gmail.com.
100% real hip hop and R&B. Rough Riders Radio. Blazing hot. 24 hour hip hop and R&B.